from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working with students and families to improve college access and student success for a better West Virginia. West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu.
Good evening, I'm Andrea Lanham at the Capitol Building in Charleston, and this is the Legislature Today. After a large crowd of chanting pro-choice advocates filled the area outside the West Virginia Senate chamber this morning, an amendment that would create exclusions to a resolution that grants no right to an abortion failed on the Senate floor. Senior reporter Dave Mistich brings us this report.
Senator Corey Palumbo, a Democrat, offered an amendment to Senate Joint Resolution 12 that would have created an exception and allowed the right to an abortion in the case of rape, incest, or medical necessity. The committee substitute of the resolution, as cleared Monday by Senate Judiciary, states that nothing in the state constitution would secure or protect a right to an abortion or requires the funding of the procedure. Palumbo explained his amendment on the Senate floor.
This amendment is fairly simple. It would just add a proviso to the amendment, which would say that provided that this constitution secures and protects a right to abortion for a woman who is a victim of incest or rape resulting in pregnancy, or if the abortion is medically necessary to save the life of the woman. I don't think really much other discussion needs to be said about it. It's pretty simple. I think it's important that we secure the right for women to have abortions in those very limited situations. And I'll just say this, I'm not certain this is the fact, but I do believe that this will be the first time the Constitution will be used to restrict rights of people in the state, and this would just at least limit that scope a little bit.
Senate Judiciary Chair Charles Trump asked various questions of Palumbo and ultimately stated that the amendment would reverse the original intent of the resolution.
First of all, I think it would be a dangerous precedent, and as far as I know, landmark action and be the first time of which I'm aware. Now there may be a state somewhere that has something in its constitution, but if the Senator from Kanawha's amendment is adopted, the West Virginia Constitution will expressly guarantee a right to certain abortions. I'm not aware of any other state constitution of any of the states in the United States which has such a guarantee. So it would reverse, really completely, but in degree, the purpose for which the resolution is offered in the first place. And that really is to allow the legislature to exercise some budgetary authority over the expenditure of Medicaid dollars.
Trump also explained that the resolution, if passed, would override a 1993 West Virginia Supreme Court decision on abortions funded by taxpayers through Medicaid. The court declared that a law signed by then-Governor Gaston Caperton was unconstitutional and that it discriminated against low-income women. Democrat Senator Mike Romano stood in support of Palumbo's amendment.
If you want to protect the life of a mother, to enable her to be able to make a tough decision between saving her own life or the life of an unborn child, then we need this amendment. Because we all know, we don't know who's going to be sitting in these seats. They could actually be somebody who would want to rid this state of that mother's ability and her family's ability to save her life. So if you want to take that risk, vote this down. You want to take that risk of watching that statute disappear in the next session, vote it down. But if you're not playing politics, and we are playing politics here, we all know that. But if we're not playing politics, then we have to apply some common sense. And the common sense tells us that we cannot ignore someone's life when it's on the line.
Palumbo's amendment was voted down 7-22 with 5 members absent. Senator Bob Plymel was the only Democrat who voted against the amendment. The resolution moves on to third reading Friday and up for a vote. Resolutions calling for constitutional amendments require a two-thirds majority in both chambers before making their way onto the ballot for the general public to decide. If passed, Senate Joint Resolution 12 would clear up issues of constitutionality surrounding House Bill 4012. That bill seeks to exclude abortion from a list of services provided by Medicaid. After being passed by the House Health Committee, the bill is expected to soon be taken up by the House Judiciary Committee. For the Legislature Today, I'm Dave Mistich in the Senate.
Tomorrow is Corrections Day at the Capitol, and we're joined now by the Secretary of the West Virginia Department of Military Affairs and Public Safety, Jeff Sandy, and his Deputy General Counsel, Stacy Nowicki. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
So there are two bills that I want to talk about tonight. The first bill is on first reading of the House, or it was today, and that's raising salaries a total of $6,000, $2,000 over each of the 3 years, beginning July of this year, for corrections officers. Can Secretary Sandy, how far is this going to go toward addressing the situation that we do have with corrections officers?
Well, we have a corrections in West Virginia is a $324 million business. And we are paying correction officers wages, which many correction officers qualify for federal and state assistance. The surrounding states to West Virginia offer tremendous more benefits and hourly wages than we do. And as a result, we're averaging paying $13.5 million a year to train correction officers that stay with us only 8 months. So the $6,000 pay increase over the next 3 years will basically make their salary around $30,000, which will make us competitive. Right now, we're 49th in the nation, and with that $6,000, it'll move us up to 40th.
Wow. And I remember the report that was given to in interims earlier last year, and here are some staggering statistics that I had found from that report. Turnover rates went from 29.2% in 2014 to 32.3% in 2016. And in 2016, 448 correctional officers left the Division of Corrections. More than 75% left within their first 2 years of service, and more than 66% left within their first year. Can you kind of talk about the consequences of these high turnover rates?
On Christmas Day, I started at 6 a.m. and started visiting facilities to thank them for their service. We had situations where we had correction officers that had been on the job 6 months training correction officers, new correction officers. So it is not a good situation. Today at 1 o'clock, we brought in 126 West Virginia National Guard, Capitol Police, State Fire Marshals to start assisting those people so they can get some rest. Many of our people have been working 7 days a week, 16 hours a day.
So there has to be some security issues with that too, if they're working 6 months and training new correctional officers as well.
Oh, absolutely. In meetings with the governor and the governor's office, and this was explained to him, that is why the governor graciously signed the executive order. And today you could see the smile on people's faces at South Central Regional Jail, knowing that they had, for example, today there was 13 individuals there. That we should have correction officers there instead of those other employees, but it made the sense of security was raised.
How far do you think that this bill is going to go to help fix these issues with turnover and all of the other issues that's facing correctional officers?
Well, this is more than just 2-2-2. This is a career path. And we have worked extensively with the governor's office to develop a plan where a correction officer knows that if he's hired today, in 6 years, he will become a sergeant. And that sergeant in 6 years, the current pay is $39,000. So although we're saying 2-2-2, if they stay with us, they have an opportunity to grow with the organization. And $39,000 in West Virginia is good, but then they can, if they stay 6 years, they can compete for lieutenants and captains and wardens, and so we have developed a career path for them.
Now, last year I had toured the Mount Olive Correctional Facility where I talked to the acting warden, Ralph Terry, and he'd kind of described the working conditions to you, saying that that's another reason why it's hard to keep correctional officers, especially with that pay. Mm-hmm. And he talked also about how they had to take on extra hours like you did, saying sometimes mm-hmm. they have to work 16 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Talk about the broad effects that it has when we have these kinds of staff shortages and few correctional officers working long days.
Oh, again, no one should have to work 16 hours a day when they have to be alert. Many of the situations which we have encountered over the past year, if there was proper staffing, it would not have happened. Imagine how brave a correction officer is opening the door to a pod which has 32 male individuals by himself. That should not happen. We need to have more than that, and that's what our goal is. And we do believe that the governor is the one who supports this bill. The House and the Senate, we believe that they support it. We believe it'll be passed, and we believe that we'll be able to get not only new correction officers, but we sent out a survey to 433 people that used to work for us that have already been through the training. And 50 of those people said they would come back. So we feel we will be successful.
Now, as you had referenced earlier, in December, Governor Justice had declared a state of emergency because of the staff shortage crisis. Mm-hmm. And he also signed an executive order giving you the authority to develop and oversee use of the divisions, including the West Virginia National Guard, to maximize staffing mm-hmm. at these facilities until legislative remedies are mm-hmm. implemented. Where are they currently stationed, and has this helped at all?
Almost, I don't have every facility that they're at, but they're at a majority of the facilities.
And has it helped?
Well, today's the first day. Today at 1 o'clock is when we started, because we had to train these individuals and educate them on what they can and cannot do. So today at 1 o'clock, we had 126 additional people in our facilities across the state.
So let's go on to the next bill, and that's Senate Bill 369. This is a department-drafted correctional consolidation bill. Mm-hmm. Ms. Nowicki, can you explain why this is necessary, and can you kind of take us through this restructuring?
Sure. Actually, the bill that is running through the system right now is House Bill 4883. It is a similar piece of legislation to 369. The consolidation of the three correctional agencies, we believe, will lead to huge savings across all three of these agencies and also to counties at the same time. And then it will allow us to use our facilities in the best manner possible. It will allow us to use our staff and the people that work and have been trained appropriately use the best way possible. If we are one agency as opposed to three separate agencies, if there are staff shortages at one agency, we can move staff from one facility to another facility without having to enter into any sort of interdepartmental agreement. There would be no new training that would be necessary for the staff because they would be trained how to work in all types of facilities that would be underneath the same department.
So I know that the bill would consolidate administrative services of yes. Corrections Agency and create the Division of Administrative Services.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is this going to affect programs, litigation, or grievance procedures?
No. Obviously the employees, if they are moved over into the Division of Administration, would have to grieve a new employer, not the Division of Corrections, not the Division of Juvenile Services, not the Division of, the Regional Jail Authority. So it will affect them from, that perspective, but all of their rights are going to remain intact.
Now, are we anticipating any layoffs from this consolidation or additions of any new employees?
Nope, none at all. We believe that we'll be able to accomplish things on a more functional basis and then through just normal attrition rates. We have vacancies already in some of these administrative positions throughout the three correctional agencies. And by cross-training the individuals that are there, everything will become more efficient, and then not filling the vacancies would be how we would start realizing the savings in that aspect.
So, Secretary, briefly, I wanted to get your opinion, just what you want to say on Corrections Day, which is coming up.
We have employees the past year that have done some tremendous things, from saving other correction officers to saving citizens. And tomorrow will be a special day for those employees. They will be honored in the rotunda, and we want to make it a special day for all corrections employees.
Well, Secretary of the Department of Military Affairs and Public Safety Jeff Sandy and Deputy General Counsel Stacy Nowicki, thank you guys so much for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In the House today, exactly halfway through the 2018 legislative session, tempers flared.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I couldn't help but notice, but today marks the 30th day. We are at the halfway mark. It's halftime. We've had one bill actually signed by our governor into law. One bill. We're on pace for two. This has been a do-nothing legislature for 30 days. I think West Virginians are ready to see democracy in action. Now, the only time I've actually seen that thus far was last Friday, when our teachers and school service personnel and public employees filled the halls. That was democracy in action. When they filled the galleries, that was democracy in action. Unfortunately, what they were watching was democracy sitting on the sideline, a do-nothing legislature. We took up bills for hunting and fishing, which may be fitting for them because their second job is going to have to be as hunters and gatherers because we've done nothing to solve this crisis. Today we're worried about upholstery. Now the governor's been out on this. He stood in front of us right there, and he said West Virginia's doing great, that he just swooped in and solved all our problems, that we have money now. And then he said, you get 1%. West Virginians are tired of 1%ers dangling out 1%. Tired of it. We don't have money for teachers, but we have money for tourists. We don't have money for school service personnel or public employees, but we have money for industry tax breaks. Just so happens, tourists can visit the Greenbrier. Our teachers, educators, school service personnel, correctional officers, they can't. So I'm tired of hearing this nonsense.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I take a little bit of offense saying we're a do-nothing legislature. The reality is we're a do-everything legislature in 60 days. We're part-time. We're not a full-time like Congress. We're only here 60 days. We have 20 committees in this House. Many of us meet at the same times. So while finance is working on a pay raise bill for teachers, government organization may be working on a bill for home rule. Judiciary may be working on a DUI law. Education, working on something to help retain teachers. We do a lot of different bills. Bills are not always caucus bills on our side. They were never always caucus bills on your side. A lot of these bills come from our individual constituents that we represent. And to indicate that something a constituent finds very important to them and their local community is a bit disingenuous. Every bill that comes through this body is important to someone. As I said, we're not a do-nothing legislature. We're a do-everything legislature in 60 days. Thank you.
Joining us now is senior reporter Dave Mestich. Dave, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
So both of us were at the governor's press conference this evening where he talked about teacher salaries and PEIA. Tell me, and you know, and his proposal differs a little bit from the version that was passed out of House Finance with the teacher pay raise.
Right. So House Finance last night, yesterday evening, came up with this 2-1-1-1 plan, which is a 2% pay raise this year and then a 1% increase over the next 3 years. What passed out of the Senate was 1% over the course, each year, over the course of 5 years, which is what the governor wants. And, you know, there seemed to be a little bit of differences of opinion even there amongst Speaker Armstead and the governor himself. And the governor had a few things to say about teacher pay raises and looking into the future, and we'll take a listen to what he had to say in this clip right here.
I believe it. The only reason in the world that I proposed this year 1-1-1-1-1 was simply because the message came down from the mountain in every way that why can't we do something for all people in self-government or in state government? Came down from all of us here, came down from all those on the other side of the aisle, and everybody should get something when things are better. And believe me, things are better, really better. Now, are we sure? Are we positive that things are going to be okay? Well, of course we're not, because we've just barely got to the point in time where we got our head above water for the first time in upteen years.
And, of course, teacher pay raises weren't the only thing that he addressed in the press conference. He also brought up PEIA along with his recommendations of what he'd like to see happen with that.
Right. Well, when we're talking teacher pay raises, there's definitely we're going to be talking about PEIA. A lot of the conversations around potential teacher strikes have centered, you know, around teacher pay raises. But I think PEIA is just as much of a factor if you talk to anyone, be that teachers unions, the Senate or the House or the governor himself. You're hearing this from every angle. The PEIA situation, we had heard over the House yesterday, they passed House Resolution 5, which calls for a freeze on the proposed changes coming up. And again, that's a non-binding agreement that doesn't secure anything necessarily. It's not law. But the governor, as well as the House and Senate leaders, Mitch Carmichael, the Senate president, and Speaker Armstead, both sort of agreed that freeze needs to take place. And they've called for that to last 16, 17 months in the future until they get a permanent fix. The governor also talked a little bit about more increased funding, up to $22 million additional dollars, where that money's going to come from. He wasn't even exactly sure, but he did have this to say about the PEI situation, and we'll take a listen to that right now.
You know, I said, what if we were to stay or do a moratorium on PEIA for basically 17 months from now, you know, and that would give us time to really come up with a solution that would maybe lead to a permanent fix of the funding of PEIA.
And of course, I do want to bring up that we have been contacted by a retiree on PEIA saying that she wants us to remember that retirees are part of this too.
Right. I mean, it's not just current state employees, and obviously the burden for lower income people that are on a fixed income, their PEIA plan would also come into play here. So.
Now, next up, intermediate courts passed out a Senate finance today.
Right.
Talk a little bit about what that entailed.
Well, the interesting thing about that is the fiscal note from the state Supreme Court called for $11.7 million. The Finance Committee basically came up with their own number, somewhere between $2 and $3 million at the cost. The legislative auditor, Aaron Allred, had this to say in the committee about that particular intermediate court system.
The thing I would point out, too, is I and my staff may think the fiscal note's inflated, but under the current constitution of the state of West Virginia, they can spend whatever money they wanted. They could spend $15 million on this intermediate court of appeals if they wanted, and the legislature would have to fund it because, as you are aware, the constitution requires the legislature to fully fund the Supreme Court's budgetary request. So as the constitution is now, we think the fiscal note is inflated. But that doesn't mean it's inaccurate, because the court, if this bill passes, could spend that money even if they don't need to spend that money.
So again, we don't really know where the money is coming from this.
Right.
Now, there were a lot of civil rights advocates at the Capitol today. Tell me a little bit about what you found out today.
Right. I spoke to Andrew Snyder from Fairness West Virginia. There's been a big push for LGBTQ rights on the municipal level, not yet on the state level. They've got a few bills dealing with various things like conversion therapy, trying to get rid of that, trying to get that banned from the state, also pushing for equal rights in various other issues, one dealing with gender identity and hate crimes. I spoke to Andrew of Fairness West Virginia, and this is what he had to say.
This is the It's one of the sort of the bedrocks of our campaign to get a non-discrimination law in our state, is building the support from all corners of West Virginia to adopt these municipal laws. And 2016, we saw five West Virginia communities adopt these LGBT non-discrimination municipal ordinances. At the end of the year, when Wheeling became the last one in December of 2016 to accomplish this, we were informed by a national organization that West Virginia adopted more LGBT non-discrimination laws in 2016 than any other state in the country. That's something we should all be very proud of. And I think that's the kind of statement that the legislature ought to listen to, that people from Wheeling to Thurman to Lewisburg, all, you know, opposite corners of the state, are adopting these protections for their LGBT residents because the state still refuses to do so.
That's it for the legislature today this evening. Please join us again tomorrow night at 6 for coverage of a public hearing on proposed oil and gas legislation. I'm Andrea Lanham. Thanks for joining us and have a great evening.